You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Americans for Truth Hour. Americans for Truth is a single-issue organization devoted to opposing the powerful homosexual activist movement. We are happy to be back with our good friend, Dr. Michael Brown, who is has written a wonderful book entitled A Queer Thing Happened to America. Michael, you on the line?
I'm here, Peter. Thank you.
Well, I finally started your book, Mike. It's wonderful. This is going to be a great read. This is actually almost a textbook, it seems. If there's any justice in the world, Mike, and we know that justice is lacking in this world, your book would be in the library with all of the pro-homosexual books, the thousands of pro-homosexual books that are found in many public libraries. Your book would be in there. What are the prospects of this book called A Queer Thing Happened to America ending up in thousands of libraries across the country?
Well, with God, all things are possible, and that's my best prospect with it. It's quite extraordinary to recognize one of our mutual friends, Lori Higgins, was checking in school library. She was involved, and I think it was 70 pro-homosexual titles, and none giving the opposite perspective, none saying that there are other opinions and the society, etc. So it really is amazing how one-sided things are. We know Kevin Jennings years ago, as far as the schools, said there is no other side to the story. It's the gay activist side and no other side. We know that GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance against Defamation, said, has been petitioning CNN to not present the other side when they're discussing, say, don't ask, don't tell in the military, etc. So it's really wild. It's as if to have a fair, civil discussion with good research is now disallowed, and to put out anything that's pro-gay, well, that's great. That's wonderful. But, you know, what heartens me is that we've been listed on Amazon under gay and lesbian titles, and since the book was available for pre-order until now, it's 50 days. We've been 50 days and the best-selling list on gay and lesbian titles, and as of yesterday, again, went up to number one in gay and lesbian nonfiction on Amazon. So all things are possible. You never know.
Right. And we will do everything we can at Americans for Truth to get the word out about this book. We're offering it. We've decided we're going to let, for a $25 contribution to Americans for Truth, we will send you one of Mike's books. You can also get it through Amazon. Actually, that probably helps Mike out more, gets that Amazon rating up. But we do have hardcover copies. This is a tremendous work. I'm looking at it right now. You've got 1,500 footnotes?
Yeah, we've got a little over 1,500 endnotes, and the only way that we were able to keep the entire book under 700 pages was by having the endnote text very small, so those that really want to dig can do so. But I researched this. We went through it from every angle. We had folks that had come out of active homosexual lifestyles read the book carefully, researchers. And I said, look, read it through the eyes of gay activist critics. Mm-hmm. Read it through the eyes of those that are going to try to pick it apart. And let's make sure that everything is written fairly, everything is written in a Christ-like tone, and everything is written truthfully and accurately. Thus far, as those people who've bashed the book, almost without exception, haven't read it. And those who've read it haven't had content with which to bash it.
Right. Now, I kind of rushed into our second part of our interview here. And the first part of the interview is available on the Americans for Truth website at Americans for Truth, all written out, F-O-R, AmericansForTruth.org. Click the After Radio Hour interviews, and they're archived there as MP3s. But let me just read Mike's bio here. Michael L. Brown holds a PhD in Near Eastern Languages and Literature from New York University and is the author of 20 books and numerous scholarly articles. He has spoken throughout the United States in 25 nations and has appeared on numerous radio and TV programs. He hosts a daily national syndicated talk radio program called The Line of Fire and has served as a visiting or adjunct professor at 7 seminaries. He spent 5 years researching material for this book called A Queer Thing Happened to America. focusing in particular on primary sources from GLBT authors, leaders, and thinkers. And the website for Dr. Brown and the book is www.askdrbrown.org. And in case you missed it, last week's was a wonderful discussion about how Mike came to Christ. Just an amazing story of a very rebellious, just wild kid doing drugs and everything, and God got a hold of him, and he happens to be Jewish, and it's an amazing thing, Mike, how God can use you in so many areas. But in this one, you will be attacked. It doesn't matter how compassionately you wrote the book. You definitely will be bashed just because it is against the normalization of homosexuality.
Yeah, of course, you know that from your own experience, Pete, and I appreciate your courage to stand with it all these years, because the level of abuse that comes your way is nothing that you normally experience in other aspects of ministry. I've had people tell me face-to-face, they can see my heart, they know I care, and yet you get blasted just the same. When I was on Tyra Banks last year, on a show they did on transgender children, so-called transgender children, I was the only voice in the entire hour, and that was only in a five-minute segment, and it was hard to even get a word in. But I was the only voice saying, the best thing, and I said it in the most gentle, gracious tones, recognizing the struggles these kids and families have, but I said, the best thing is for these kids to be at home from the inside out. The best thing is, rather than sex change surgery, mutilating surgery, hormones for life, puberty blockers, and all these things, sending a boy to school dressed as a girl, and on, the best thing is for these kids to be at home with themselves from the inside out. If we could discover ways to help them, and that isn't that the best way? And someone posted the whole Tyra Banks show on YouTube a couple days later, and I looked at the comments on that segment, and there were many people saying, hey, let the guy talk. I don't agree with them, but you shouldn't cut him off all the time. But there are a lot of other segments where comments where people were blasting me, where people were I remember one gal, she identified as open-minded, loving, tolerant. She was like 16, 17 years old. And she listed the physical things she wanted to do. She wanted to kick me and hit me and do this and do that. And don't you just hate him? And you realize, okay, this is really a spiritual battle.
Right.
And obviously we want to emulate the character of Jesus, but the abuse will come, the attacks will come. And of course, I've been called Hitler. I've been called a jihadist. One gay activist website, someone wrote a poem to me as a jihadist. I had my face put on the body of a Muslim terrorist in a picture. It's a very funny picture. He's holding an AK-47. And it's my face on his body with these other terrorists. But the moment you take respectful issue. Look, I did a debate last week at University of Central Florida.
Yeah, hold on. Before we go into that, Mike, I want to hear all about that debate, because I heard you did very well, and I want to get into that. But the point being here, that this is a movement which has come to believe, many of its activists have come to believe, that there really is no other side, and they've convinced themselves. And I still stand back, and I can't believe this, Mike, because you think, how absurd it is to compare Mike Brown, Pete LaBarbera, Bob Knight, Matt Barber to the Ku Klux Klan. But they have convinced themselves that there is no respectable dissent to this issue. And so it's almost as if by continually making these absurd comparisons that somehow there's some truth to them. But it's preposterous on its face.
It's preposterous on its face. I have a whole chapter in the book about hate speech and really exposing that. Matthew Frank, in an article in Washington Post a few months back, said that those who bring the charge of hate often do it because they don't want to have a serious discussion. But, I was told that there no tolerance should be shown towards bigots. No tolerance should be shown to the KKK. No tolerance should be shown to someone who does not support all the goals of homosexual activism. I wrote to one guy, and I said, okay, let me just understand this. You claim I'm Hitler. You claim I'm bigoted. You claim I'm intolerant. And I had the whole list of all of the ugly things he said. And I said, don't you think that's a little over the top? First, I'm a Jew. Second, I'm a follower of Jesus. And third, here's exactly what I wrote. I was trying to expose something in the argument. And he wrote back and said, but you are Hitler. So there people have convinced themselves, and because in their mind, if you dare say that God did not intend a man to marry a man, or that the best thing for a kid is to tie that kid with his biological mother and father in a family. That would be the best case scenario. If you say that, you are now considered to be an intolerant, hate-filled bigot that right. people don't even have the capacity, it seems, to recognize another side to the story, let alone the foundational side to the story.
Well, and I think what's interesting, too, in the last few years, it's been ratcheted up so that now if you oppose same-sex so-called marriage, that is the now the criterion for being a hateful Hitlerite bigot. Just, I mean, even though 31 states now, I believe, have voted as states against same-sex marriage, that if you oppose same-sex marriage, you are some incredibly hateful, prejudiced fools. So, you know, it's constantly being ratcheted up.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know where the American public has stood in the elections on this. You remember when Carrie Prejean, the gal running for Miss USA, competing for Miss USA, gives her answer that, you know, marriage is between a man and a woman. Outright! How dare she? What in the world's what in the world has happened to moral sanity? What in the world has happened to thinking people in America that just saying marriage is the union of a man and woman is now an extremist anti-gay position? If anything gave us proof of the fact that America needs a moral and cultural revolution, it's just that one fact.
You bet. And Mike, when we come back from the break, I want to hear about your debate. But folks, you need to get this book. If you want to get it through the website, it's going to be $25 to the Americans for Truth website. Send an email to americansfortruth@gmail.com or just go to Amazon. The book is called A Queer Thing Happened to America. The author is Michael Brown, and his website is askdrbrown.org, www.askdrbrown.org. We'll be right back. To Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Pete LaBarbera, and we're interviewing Michael Brown, who is a professor. He is a very prolific author. He's written 20 books, and his latest is something he didn't have to do. He's one of the world's leading Messianic Jews, which is a Jewish person who believes in Jesus Christ as the Messiah. But he wrote this book called A Queer Thing Happened in America, and I still have a lot to learn about Mike Brown, but what I have come to know him as an outstanding example of what a Christian should be on this issue. His motto is, now I'm going to get this wrong, Mike.
Reach out and resist.
Reach out and resist. We reach out in love with the love of Christ to people who are trapped in the sin of homosexuality or bisexuality, transgenderism. But we also resist the demands of the agenda. And I'm afraid many people in the culture now, and many Christians are starting to kind of do away with the resisting part. And the effect, Mike, since the homosexual lobby is at the zenith of its power, if Christians stop resisting, what happens?
If we cease to be the salt, if we cease to be the light, woe to America on 100 different fronts. Jesus said, if the light within you is darkness, how great is the darkness? I've had school teachers call my radio show this week, The Line of Fire. One was an elementary school teacher, the other a high school teacher. And they both said, you've got to stand. You've got to continue standing. You don't know what's happening in the schools. The school teacher from Houston said 10 years ago when she was teaching fifth graders, she quit teaching 10 years ago, that she was dealing with these issues in the school. She was dealing with a boy who wanted to come to school dressed as a girl. And when she met his dad, the dad had custody. The dad was a drag queen. And you say it doesn't affect kids. Of course the models of the role models of moms and dads affect kids and affect their thinking. And what happens now is I've actually had people say, well, what's wrong with a boy going to school dressed as a girl?
Yeah.
What's wrong with a boy using the girl's bathroom or the girl's locker room if he really thinks he's a girl? And you think, are we actually living in this world or is this just a bad dream? It's not to minimize the struggles people go through, but it's to say, how in the world did we get here? We got here because the church lost its moral courage. We got here because we were more concerned about being relevant than by being biblical and loyal to the Lord. We got here by thinking somehow if we could just be nice to people, they'd all like us and accept our message. And that's not the role of the church, and that's not the way the gospel works either.
Yeah, Mike, well said. And now tell us, you were recently involved in a debate about gay marriage, and I heard that you really demolished this opponent you had. It's okay to say that. political correctness police. And in other words, you won the debate. Tell us all about it, but give us the lead up to this debate, all the controversy. It almost didn't happen. Give us the whole story.
Oh, yeah. So when my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, came out last month, March 14th, my plan was to go into different cities, and that's what I plan to be doing the next few months as well, go into different cities, speak in different settings, church settings, neutral settings, whatever settings we can to get the message out, and ideally to do lectures on college campuses with open mic Q&A, or better still, debates. So what I've said is any city where I'm going, we've been in D.C. area, so that's Maryland, Virginia, D.C., New York area, contacts looking into things in the Atlanta area, people looking into things in different parts of California, Orlando, these different cities, that we said, listen, I'm glad to go on to any college. I'm a professor. I've done lectures or debates at places like Oxford University, Hebrew University in Jerusalem, Ohio State University, USC, Yale, Columbia. I mean, enough places where I've been. It should be no problem to have an intellectual debate. In fact, we can use this as a model for how to address these difficult, volatile issues in a civil, mutually respectful way. People could not get anyone willing to sponsor these debates in these different states. In fact, in some locations, Christian groups told our people that were on the ground there, living in these different locations, told them, if you try to bring this to our campus, we will shut it down. Christian groups.
Oh, Mike, that's terrible.
I kid you not. So we had
you're talking Christian groups that
in Orlando.
Mike, sorry, you're talking Christian groups that American parents would know. I mean, these are groups that are known.
Oh yeah, yeah, they're known. I'm not going to mention names to embarrass, but they are known. Their thing is, we've been building relationships with the gay and lesbian community, gently, carefully, respectfully, undoing a lot of the damage of the rhetoric and the right wing, fundamentalist political stuff. And if you come in and do a debate, it's going to undo what we've been doing. First, if I come in and do a debate, it will, by God's grace, be a public model of the thing they're trying to do in private. Number two, don't they understand that until they say to a practicing homosexual man or woman, I fully affirm your homosexuality, or if they claim to be Christians, I fully affirm you as a practicing homosexual Christian, until they do that, they have not gone far enough, and until they do that, they will not have really built the relationship they think they have, and they will not really be able to lead these people into freedom without drawing a line. So yes, sadly, we actually had a Christian group, at least one in Orlando, say that very thing. We had friends with the same opposition in Ivy League campuses in the greater Boston area that was trying to set something up. So finally, a very zealous Christian ministry group in Orlando, Resound Mission Space, made contact with a Christian professor at the University of Central Florida, and this Christian professor went ahead and booked a room in a public building on the campus, after which there was, you could say, all hell broke loose. Vice presidents got involved, some trying to shut it down, some trying to make it go forward. I have copies of emails from one gay activist, either a faculty coach or a faculty member. He, in writing, said, I will do everything in my power to shut this down. And he was overruled by a supervisor. Some diversity departments said the debate will go on. Others said they want to shut it down. They would only let it go on, ultimately, with the presence of four policemen. Okay, this is for an academic debate, and the professor that I was going to debate, that a local family activist referred to us, and he said, I'd debate anybody on this subject. He proposed the topic, same-sex marriage, should it be legal? I mean, how can we not debate that? The president said he's not going to defend DOMA. We've got California bitterly divided over this. You mentioned earlier 31 states have passed legislation upholding marriage as the union of a man and a woman. Four states have made legal same-sex so-called marriage. So how can you not discuss this issue? So others in the university said to not go forward would be a worse PR disaster than to go forward. They ended up deciding to go forward. The day before the debate, there was a conference call with 11 different individuals, campus chief of police, vice presidents, gay activists, the professor I was debating, the local ministry, everyone but me, by the way. And we finally had the debate. We had a room seated about 200. It was almost entirely full. There were no disruptions of any kind. And I have to say I was terribly disappointed in the performance of my debating opponent in his inability to answer, even refusal to answer, some of the simplest questions. And what was really painful to see, though, was the reaction of some of the students that came with him. We were talking about distinctions in gender roles, differences between men and women, and some of them started snickering, and he started snickering. I actually stopped, and I said, you know, this is really indicative of what we're dealing with. You know, no distinction between gender roles. I actually drew applause from some of the students that were with him, and I said, this really illustrates what we're dealing with. And I said to him, if you were raised by a mom and dad, which one could you throw away? Which one was indispensable? Are there no differences and distinctions between male and female? Are there no distinctions between what a man can do and what a woman can do? And it was really remarkable to see. It was also remarkable to see that there were, in the entire night, not one solid argument raised as to why the state should change its view of marriage. The simple and oft-repeated argument that the reason the state conveys benefits on marriage is because marriage conveys benefits on the state. Otherwise, why is the government getting into our private romantic and sexual relationships? It's because marriage conveys benefits on the state. That was never answered a single time in the entire night. So from the side of truth, I was glad to be on the side of truth because truth definitely triumphed at the debate.
Well, and Mike, you know, thanks for going through that. But what strikes me is, you know, I mean, you have a reputation of really trying hard not to offend. You know, you love these people, obviously. I'm sure you've witnessed to many homosexuals in your life, just in the line of work and in your role as a pastor and the many you know, contact you've made in that area. And yet you are just perceived because of your belief system as anathema. And it's just shocking. This is the kind of anti-intellectualism we see on the left. And now we're seeing on this issue. But I think one of the differences is they sort of sense that they have the power to do it on this issue because the political correctness is so strong that, hey, you know, we can just shut down the speech because, you know, maybe we can pull it off. They don't feel they have to engage anymore.
You're absolutely right. One tactic is just to mock and ignore. I've had people now that have mocked and attacked me. They said, well, Brown has the tone down. He has, in other words, we can't fault the way he says things. And then they'll attack me for things I haven't said. One of them wrote a few years ago, he has a carefully scripted plot of compassion and so on, but really he's a wolf in sheep's clothing because the person didn't like what I was saying. So here's my proposal to anyone listening that agrees with the gay activist position, to anyone who identifies as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, read my book. Pull out any chapter you're interested in. Read it through. Read it with the end notes. Tell me where you differ with me. Call into my radio show. The lines are open because I'm convinced that if we put the issues on the table, truth really will triumph.
Well, you know, and I'm going to say right here that we will step in and Americans for Truth will sponsor a debate between Dr. Brown and any homosexual activist, preferably a theologian if there's one. We've extended the same offer to for Dr. Robert Gagnon. And you know, because he can't get anybody to debate him, but we will gladly sponsor a debate in a neutral forum because I think you're right. We've got to talk about these things, and we've got to avoid this perilous situation where they just want to shut down an opposing view. Just shut it down. We're talking to Mike Brown, who's the author of A Queer Thing Happened to America. You can get it for $25 from Americans for Truth, or you can get it at Amazon.com. A Queer Thing Happened to America, or go to the website AskDrBrown.org. We'll be right back.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your tax-deductible gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Pete LaBarbera, president of Americans for Truth about homosexuality. Our website is AmericansForTruth.org. I'm talking to my friend Mike Brown, who's just he's an American treasure. In my view, he's one of the world's leading authorities on Messianic Judaism, how the Bible. We just had Easter, Mike. Jesus came for the Jew first. how did we ever get to the point where Jews thought that Jesus was not for them? I mean, it's Jesus was Jewish.
A lot of it is the church made it difficult. I mean, bear in mind, this is the Passover season, and then the church under Constantine made the formal separation to have different dates and things like that. But thankfully, God continues to bring Jewish people to himself, and much of the church recognizes more and more its Jewish roots and heritage. So I'm confident that we'll continue to see bridges built and Jewish people coming to know Jesus as Messiah.
Well, amen to that, and we pray that happens. And Mike, let's get to your book. Now, I may need to beg for you a fourth part of this interview. You could be my second four-part interview, Mike, but there's just so much in this book. This really is, it's a textbook almost. I haven't read the whole thing. I've really only read in depth in one chapter. And Mike, again, I want us to reiterate, you have a program on your website. Now, the book's website is a queerthing.org.
AQueerThing.com.
I'm sorry, AQueerThing.com.
Uh-huh.
And there, Mike's got a campaign going to get people to get this, to find ways to get this book in libraries. We will do the same thing at Americans for Truth. Let me tell you, in some areas it might be easy. In other areas, it might be near impossible. But as Mike says, anything's possible with God. And this book belongs in libraries, pure and simple. It's written with a heart of compassion, but he doesn't shy away. And Mike is an example of that, and I admire your intellectual honesty. You talk about how some of the same arguments that are used to rationalize the normalization of homosexuality could be used to normalize pederasty, sex between men and boys, or pedophilia, just sex between adults and children. Talk about that, because few people know that there is a long history of pederasty in the world.
Yeah, this was a terribly painful chapter to write. And you say, well, why in the world would you write it? Are you saying that homosexuals are pedophiles and that's one of the constant accusations? No, that wasn't the argument of the chapter. The argument of the chapter was that I was not comparing the acts, I was comparing the arguments. Because what struck me as I was researching this was the more I would delve into this, for example, the APA, American Psychiatric Association, famously depathologized homosexuality in 1973 and said it's not a sickness, it's not a mental disorder, it's not like schizophrenia or something like that. And of course, that's been a major platform for gay activists to say, look, the APA says it's not a sickness, and then other organizations followed suit. Well, some of the same psychiatrists and psychologists who were involved in those early decisions have also been trying to declassify pedophilia or pederasty for the same reasons. Because they said, look, if the person is not troubled themselves by their sexual desires or orientations, and if the person can live a normal functioning life, then why should this be considered a disorder? And we're not talking about someone going out and raping a child. We're talking about these men who say, hey, when I was 12 years old, I had a consensual relationship with a man who was 30, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I'm going to try, now that I'm 30, I'm having relations with 12-year-old boys, and it's wonderful for both of us. And as sick and pathetic as that sounds, as I started to read the literature, I said, I don't believe this. Point for point for point, these are the same arguments that are being raised to us by gay activists.
Let me go through those 8 points there on your book. Number one, pedophilia is. Let's do this. Let me say the point, and then you talk about the point. How's that?
Sure.
Okay. Number one, pedophilia is innate and immutable.
Yeah, gay activists will tell us I was born this way and I can't change. Well, the same things are told us by pedophiles by pedophile researchers. I was born this way. I can't change. Well, we all say that pedophilia is wrong. So the fact that someone was born that way and can't change in and of itself proves nothing about the morality of the act.
Okay, number two, pederasty is richly attested in many different cultures throughout history.
We're told by gay activists that if you'll study history, you'll see that there's a rich tapestry of homosexuality and that many famous leaders and great men and women and artists and so on were homosexuals. Well, actually, many of them were actually pederasts. So what does that prove? Does that therefore justify it because it's richly attested in history? Certainly not.
Now, Mike, let me get you on this point. This is interesting. You know, we've also always mentioned, you know, that the early gay pride parades included pedophiles. In fact, North American Man Boy Love Association was NAMBLA, a notorious man boy sex group. They call it Man Boy Love, of course. They marched in pride parades. Harry Hay, one of the early icons of the American homosexual activist movement, or the earliest icon, actually said, NAMBLA marches with me. But what you're bringing out is that, you know, the human history itself is riddled with pederasty, sex between men and boys. Give us some more background on that. I mean, is this just a mentoring thing? They rationalized it. How was it rationalized?
Some in ancient Greek society rationalized it as a mentoring thing. Obviously, there was the strong sexual element. I'd even heard a saying, I can't verify the exact source of it, that for children you have a woman, for romance you have a mistress, for sex you have a boy. And it was looked at as a transitional mentoring process. Some have claimed that you have gay marriage in different ancient societies. You'll find it in this, you know, far-flung island. And when you look into it, it's almost always some weird right between a man and a boy. But, you know, people will say, look at Leonardo da Vinci. We all know he was gay. Well, if he was gay, he was having relations with an underage boy. Mm-hmm. And you could go on, you know, Oscar Wilde, you know, famous icon of gay activism and suffered because of his sexual acts in England and exiled in France and so on. Well, he was involved with underage boys. So that history is attested as well. And although every homosexual man I have ever met will tell me they're sickened by the thought of man-boy relations. In point of fact, it is something very major in the early gay activist literature. In fact, many of these guys felt completely abandoned as the gay activist movement went a little bit more conservative and mainstream to say, no, we just want to marry and have nice families like everybody else. That's not how it was in the earliest days.
Wow. And, you know, I was told you I brought in a book that we acquired called Loving Boys, Volume 1, by a guy named Dr. Edward Brongersma. Tell me about him. He was a distinguished jurist in Holland.
He was a distinguished jurist in Holland. He was a pedophile advocate, again, claiming that grown men can have consensual, loving relationships with boys, with teenage boys, with preteen boys. He argued for the lowering of the age of consent. He became a parliamentarian as a known pedophile, became a parliamentarian, argued for this. I quote him in the book. He's, I believe, ultimately knighted or whatever the equivalent would be in Holland, and then ultimately committed suicide. I mean, it's a totally tragic story to me.
It's sick stuff, and it's unbelievable. All right, let's get to keep on your points, Mike. The third point, we're talking about how arguments for pederasty, homosexuality, could also be made for pederasty, sex between men and boys. Number three, the claim that adult-child sexual relationships cause harm is greatly overstated and often completely inaccurate.
Yeah, we'll say, look, male-male sex, it's much, much higher percentage of sexually transmitted disease. We're talking about among adults, and you're 400 more times likely to get a sexually transmitted disease or something like that, or it's harmful in other ways. And well, the same, and gay activists will say, no, it's wonderful and it's liberating. Well, pederasts say the same thing. No, that the idea that these relations are harmful are actually greatly exaggerated. And they'll point to literature where there were boys in reform homes that were incorrigible until the workers started sleeping with them, and then they changed.
Mm. By the way, Mike, are the pedophile advocates gaining strength again, or is that sort of – where does that stand right now? And are they getting more vocal again, or is it sort of pushed down?
Well, I thankfully, that is still associated with abuse. That is still associated with stealing something from a minor that is not yours. But I have no question that given enough time, as we lose sight of the rest of our moral bounds, just as there's talk about why shouldn't incest be legal between consenting adults and what's wrong with polyamory, and we should even look into polygamy, and these things are in the media, these things are out there, it won't surprise me that there'll be more movements again to reconsider the age of consent. But just think back a generation ago that the people who would be considered bigots were the one who said that two men shouldn't marry,
right?
Or the government should not recognize that as married. Who knows what's coming in another few years?
Right, if you ratchet it up and up it goes. Okay, number four, consensual adult-child sex can actually be beneficial to the child. This is a claim made by pro-pederasty advocates.
Yeah, the scary thing there, Peter, is not just that older people make that claim, but that people who had these relations when they were boys, Larry Kramer, famous gay activist, out and proud and fighting for AIDS activism and all of this, Larry Kramer said that the gay men he knows, when they had their encounters as boys, every one of them said it was pleasurable and positive, that it was a positive experience in their lives. So the scary thing is, not just the adult saying it, but the child saying it. I've got quotes from 11-year-old, 14-year-old, 17-year-old saying how wonderful this relationship with the older man is, and then many of them that are now older saying how beneficial these relationships were to them, how consensual and liberating and helpful they were to them as boys. It's sickening to read the stuff, but those are the arguments they make.
Okay, and I don't want to – we got 40 seconds to break, Mike, but that is particularly troubling, and that's the type of thing – when you hear that – you know, that's where the media, it seems to me, would come in and say, wait a minute, when you see these guys saying, who now say they're positively gay, but they're saying, hey, my same-sex relationship when I was 13 was positive and part of my identity. That's where a media should come in and hold those activists accountable.
Instead, we're called the bigots.
Right. I mean, it's just patently absurd that nobody would question as to, hey, this is the formation of an unhealthy identity when the root of it is pedophilia. We're talking to Mike Brown, who's the author of A Queer Thing Happened to America. It's a brand new book. It's an excellent work. It is a big work, so get ready to read. We'll be right back. Hello, everybody, and you're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour. I've just weaseled a commitment to a fourth interview with Mike Brown because he's a fascinating guy to interview and he's got a great book here and it's a big book and there's lots of information. And Mike, before I get to your points here on this pedophilia chapter, let's just say, you know, we know a lot of gay, openly homosexual people and proud homosexuals listen to our show. What do you say to a guy who's at least a little curious that maybe his assumptions about homosexuality, about his gay identity, about whether you can be a positively gay Christian, he has some doubts. What do you say to that man or woman who's listening to this show, maybe online?
First, I want to say to that person that you need to have the courage to be willing to come out. Come out from where you are and not be so afraid of the truth, because Jesus said the truth will set you free. I really genuinely know many people who have come out of homosexuality and who are happy and blessed. Some of them have experienced a genuine transformation and gone from homosexuality to heterosexuality. Others are very happily celibate for this season of their lives and just enjoying knowing the Lord. If you believe in a God, ask yourself what He designed you for. When He made your body, when He formed you, did He make you to be with a man or to be with a woman? Ask yourself a question. Would God design you in such a way that you and your partner cannot reproduce the offspring of who you are? Isn't the goal being that we are fruitful and multiply? And think of this. With all the scientific changes we have in technology, all the advances, still every human being is the product, one way or another, of a male contribution and a female contribution. That's just the way we were designed. I want to assure you that God does have a better way. And I want to ask you, deep down, don't you have some questions? Deep down, when you're home alone struggling, don't you know there's something wrong, something missing? Could it be that all the people telling you these Christians are so full of hate, stay away from them, they just want to hurt you, they just want to take advantage of you, they want to make you into the next poster boy, they're just they're secret homosexuals themselves. Could it be that all that rhetoric is just a way to keep you from finding out the truth? So I want to encourage you, alone with God, ask Him for the truth. Put aside all the apologetics and all the answers you've heard. Read the Scriptures for yourself. There's a reason why for centuries and centuries and centuries and centuries, people coming at the Bible from every different angle never dreamed up some of these wild interpretations of these verses that gay activists and gay theologians have. There's a reason for it. It's because it's not in the Bible. God clearly says homosexual practice is sin. God clearly says Jesus died for every sin. God clearly says there is a better way if we look to Him.
Oh, thanks, Mike. Now, we're reading from Mike Brown's chapter where he says he's making the point that the same arguments that can be used to rationalize the normalization of homosexual behavior could be applied to pedophilia. And you'll want to get the book for this chapter alone. It's fascinating. Mike, point five, pederasty should not be classified as a mental disorder since it does not cause distress to the pederast to have these desires and since the pederast can function as normal.
I'm sorry, Mike,
a normal contributing member of society.
Yeah, those are the arguments of men like Dr. Richard Green. He was involved in the depathologizing of homosexuality in the 70s. He has been arguing for the depathologizing of pederasty and pedophilia, saying that for the same reasons, the identical reasons that psychologists and psychiatrists said we should no longer view homosexuality as a mental disorder or a sickness, for the exact same reasons we should now declassify pedophilia and pederasty. And again, the point is you can make the same arguments, and if you're going to make these arguments, then if you want to rationalize or justify homosexual acts or come to a moral conclusion based on them, you have to be willing to do the same for pedophilia and pederasty. So one of the things I say in this chapter is you better come up with some new arguments because these are being used by people whose views you repudiate. And my goal was not to have the reader make this subtle association that all homosexuals are pederasts.
That's what they'll say about this chapter, of course, right?
Of course they do, even though I have it in all caps at the beginning. Repeat after me. Mike Brown is not saying that homosexuals are pedophiles. I make that as plain as I can, but people aren't willing to tackle the arguments. Let's deal with the substance. And I've had philosophers read this. I've had lawyers read this. I've had theologians read it. Vet this chapter carefully, and they've agreed the arguments are sound arguments.
Right. Okay, we're going to skip over number six because we've already gone through that. Many of the illustrious homosexuals of the past were actually pedophiles. Number seven, people are against intergenerational intimacy. Now, that's the modern-day euphemism for adult child sex. People are against intergenerational intimacy because of the antiquated social standards and puritanical sexual phobias.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that exactly what we're told, that the only possible way that you can have any opposition to a man having sex with a man or a woman having sex with a woman is think that it's icky, think that it's wrong, think it's repulsive. It's just because you're holding to antiquated views. It's just because you yourself have all of these phobias and hang-ups. That is the exact same argument that is raised by pederasts and pedophile advocates. Again, we're not talking about some 30-year-old guy kidnapping a 7-year-old girl or boy and forcing them into sexual relations. We're talking about, say, a mutually consensual relationship between, say, a 13-year-old boy and a 40-year-old man. They'll say the only reason you stand against that is just because you get these societal hang-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Exact same thing the gay activists tell us.
So I guess that makes us both a couple of pedophobes, huh, Mike?
I would say so.
Well, it is interesting. You know, we talked about it many times in the show. Now there, you see the attempted mainstreamization of the word transphobe. You know, now you see transgender.
Exactly.
So they would say,
if you have an issue, if you say, you know, sir, you shouldn't wear a dress, and I have an issue, sir, with you using the ladies' bathroom, and I don't want you teaching my kid in daycare, that's transphobia.
Exactly.
You know, God help us.
Okay, number eight, you say this is all about love and equality and liberation.
Yeah, doesn't that sound familiar? I have the right to marry the one I love. I have the right to be with the one I love. Christians hear those arguments and go, I don't have an answer. Well, that's what these people are saying. I've got it in their own words, quote after quote, from the younger people and from the older people and saying, this is wonderful, profound love. You don't understand our relationship. How can you stand against it? And what I challenge every gay activist is, if you want to use those same arguments, you're going to defeat yourself. You better come up with some newer and better arguments. And no moral point can be made from all of these arguments. There is no moral point to say this gives us justification for what we do. To the contrary, exposes that none of these arguments carry any moral weight.
Yeah, unless you be charged with going too far, Mike. I mean, there was a time, and I think this is a factually accurate statement, when opposition to homosexuality was as strong as opposition to adult child sex today.
Right, and what actually changed? Have we discovered that the Bible says something different? No. Have we discovered that people are actually born this way and it's scientifically proven and can't possibly change? No. Have we proven that this is in the best interest of society to endorse? No. So what's changed? What's changed is the attitudes of society and the opposition to those that raise a voice of protest.
Well, Mike, we're going to have to say goodbye for this one, but we've got two more segments in this interview coming up in the next couple of weeks, and I appreciate you coming on. And, Mike, give me 30 seconds on what was the biggest surprise you had in the research in writing this book.
The biggest surprise in writing the book, probably how radically and dramatically and comprehensively society has been changed and almost brainwashed, and how radically and comprehensively opposition is being silenced, and how radically and comprehensively we are way down the other side of the slippery slope. There's no debating it. We are sliding down rapidly, and if we don't wake up now, we've got massive apologizing to do to our kids and our grandkids.
Yeah, well said, Michael. Listen, folks, this book is the book to test the other side to see whether they will allow another opinion. It's called A Queer Thing Happened to America. I want you to get a copy from us or go to Amazon.com. A Queer Thing Happened to America, go to AmericansForTruth.org, AmericansForTruth.org, or their website, AQueerThing.com. We'll talk to you next week, Mike.
This was the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Tune in Saturdays at 11 p.m. to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Stay informed and engaged on the issues of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with them as they work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. The Americans for Truth Hour, Saturdays at 11 p.m. on AM 1160.